For Cybercrime Radio, I'm Paul John Spaulding. Joining me is Kyle McIntyre, owner and executive recruiter at McIntyre Associates. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Paul. It's great to be here.
According to your bio, you've placed VPs, SVPs, C-level executives, as well as CISOs for companies ranging from the seed stage all the way up to Fortune 500 companies. But for today, I did want to narrow into AI a little bit. Let's start by setting the stage. What are the most in-demand AI jobs right now, and what's their intersection with cybersecurity?
That's a great question, and it's an interesting answer because when I think about what AI jobs are in demand right now, I have to kind of think towards the use cases where AI is being applied, because depending on what kind of AI experience you're looking for, if it's LLMs, for example, you may not find somebody that has years and years of that kind of experience. So where I see AI being applied right now in cybersecurity, well, more broadly in the enterprise, is kind of to integrate into existing workflows to see like what gaps can we fill or what menial tasks or time-consuming tasks can we either replace the human using AI or augment that human's ability to move quickly. So more broadly speaking, enterprise workflows. But when I zoom in into cybersecurity, I think about the security operations center. So applying AI and automation inside of a SOC is not a new concept, but certainly with the advent of LLMs and kind of more advanced and more groundbreaking types of AI, I think we'll see some very interesting applications of that kind of technology in the security operations center. Now, when I think about the cybersecurity vendor community, that's a little bit of a different story because every kind of new cybersecurity startup nowadays has an AI angle to it, or they're an AI cybersecurity company, or even just an AI company that happens to be able to play in the cybersecurity ecosystem. So in that case, for cybersecurity vendors, almost any job can be considered an AI job right now, right? So if that's a marketing person or a finance person, you know, if they're building an AI cybersecurity product, I would also include those types of jobs here because right now it's kind of a foot race in the vendor community around AI and cybersecurity. I think that most high-end demand jobs outside of cyber, probably engineers, data scientists, things like that, you know, outside of the vendor community, but security-centric, it would be the SOC, the Security Operations Center. And then, you know, more focus on the vendor community. I think you look at all these budding young cybersecurity startups that are playing in AI, and there's tons of jobs that will be open there that probably don't actually require previous AI cybersecurity experience, but rather it requires a certain type of person, which I think we'll get into in probably some of the next questions here.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say this because I also feel, and we were chatting a little bit before, that AI is changing so rapidly that perhaps the job roles now that involve AI will also change just as rapidly. But one thing I'm trying to think about is the CISO position is so critical. That's what we talk a lot here about on our media, and I'm sure that's something you deal with all the time as CISOs. But is there going to be, do you think, a subsect of CISOs that are AI specialists, or is there going to be a dedicated department, some kind of AI CISO, CISO AI expert? I don't know quite how to word that.
Yeah, well, that's a good question too. I think to answer the first part of the question, will there be kind of specialized AI CISOs? I think if you're looking at enterprise SaaS companies, let's just pick that group right now. If you're looking at enterprise SaaS companies, if you're a CISO, I don't think you have the choice whether to focus on AI or not. It's going to happen, right? There are going to be other places in the enterprise in your company where AI is being applied that is going to present new risks, right? And new vulnerabilities. And so on that front, I think every CISO needs to be aware of kind of the trends and the new developments around AI. And then for them inside their own organization and for their own job, you know, I talked about the Security Operations Center before. Not every CISO has an internal SOC, but anybody that does own a security operations center, I think, again, you have to consider not just the new threats that AI can present, both from inside the enterprise and from bad actors outside the enterprise, but also you have to look at how do we increase our efficiency in the SOC? How do we decrease our spend in the SOC and increase our ROI? So I think if you're a CISO and you're in kind of a forward-leaning company or a growthy company or any kind of a company of consequence, you have to be aware of and focus on AI from a lot of different angles. And to answer the second part of your question, should the CISO have a specialist underneath them? Probably. I think it depends on the company and on the problems and obstacles and goals and things like that. But I definitely see that there are AI and automation specialists inside of SOCs all around the world already. Now, that role may evolve a bit as the technology evolves and as the problems change. But absolutely, I think that a role underneath the CISO, somebody who can really keep their finger on the pulse of this, that's probably going to become more and more common, I would think.
Well, maybe you could expand a bit on qualifications that you would look for if you were hiring somebody to fill a role that was more AI-centric. What are you really out there searching for? Because the pool of people, I don't know how big it is. That would also be something you could tell me.
Yeah. So if you look at the talent pool of people who are really hardcore AI folks, and that's pretty much all they spent their time on the last several years, that's a very small pool. When I think about, for example, like I'm working with a really interesting pre-revenue AI cybersecurity company right now, which is basically looking at augmenting SOC engineering workflows and things like that, kind of some of the stuff we talked about before. And so in terms of building a company like that, what do I look for? I look for transferable skills and experiences, right? This whole new frontier of large language models and things like that, like I'm not going to find somebody who has a track record scaling a company, hopefully through an exit, that has a lot of LLM experience. Those two things are incongruent right now. So what I look for is transferable skills and experiences. So I think about what's the journey that my client, in this case, is looking to embark on right now, and what's the closest we can come to finding somebody who's been on that journey before. So in the case of a vendor, it's going to be the early stage, zero to X million in revenue, operating on a tight budget, somebody who's been around kind of the fundraising environment, understanding the consequences of taking on new investors, taking on new funding, and what certain types of valuations can do to your journey and things like that. So people who have that kind of experience from the business building side, that's really what I look for. If it's a more technical role, sometimes you have to go outside of the vendor community, right? You may have to look into some of the national labs and things like that, or NASA, right? Depending on what the role is, if it's a very technical, not really a business focused role. Outside of transferable skills and experiences, I also always, no matter what the role is, look for somebody who's coachable. And that goes for, you know, director level people all the way through SVP and C-level. I mean, the best executives I interact with, they still understand that they don't know everything and there's always something to learn and there's always a place to improve. So aside from the skills and experiences, I really look for somebody who's eager to learn, somebody who's humble and coachable.
Well, it's funny because you're basically mentioning characteristics that are more personality and professional traits rather than something ultra specific like a certification. But if somebody is out there saying, hey, I have all those things, but is there any kind of certification I can get, something official that someone can pursue to be recruited more easily by somebody like you or anybody else?
The honest question is, for me personally, there are no certifications out there that I look for right now around AI. Part of the reason for that is because what I said before around LLMs being generally like a new development, right? 10 years ago, very few people would even know what you were talking about if you said LLM, and certainly it wasn't really being applied in a business sense. So right now, because it's such a new technology, I'm not really looking for certifications. I'm really having to look for these other kind of things that I just talked through, different characteristics. But I will say, if you're somebody who's looking for a job in AI and you're trying to figure out, like, how can I get a little bit of a leg up here? Unfortunately, it's not going to be something that jumps right out on your resume. This may be something that comes through in an interview. But if you spend your time really experimenting with what's out there, with the different LLMs that are out there, doing your research as well, and even kind of like experimenting, right? You could even just pull up Gemini or ChatGPT and do some experiments and see what kind of answers you get back when you use different sorts of prompts and things like that. I think that kind of work is probably going to help you in your job search more than just getting a certification. I doubt that a lot of those certifications are keeping up with the use cases out there around generative AI. So really, I think it's get your hands dirty. And if you can conduct some tests and things like that, even just with ChatGPT, document it, right? Put it in a Word doc, put it in a PDF, attach that to your resume. Something that demonstrates your understanding and your interest in AI, I think is going to be more powerful than a certification. And certainly if you've had prior job experiences where you can make a case for here's where I used AI or here's where I got exposed to AI, that's also, I think, more important right now than certifications are.
Yeah, I mean, we're dealing with bleeding edge tech here when it comes to Gen AI, so that does make sense. And speaking of bleeding edge, of course, when something like this happens, the AI craze, if you will, of the past few years, a ton of startups start appearing all over the place. But Kyle, I'm sure you've taken a look at this area too. Do you see any particular qualities in successful startups or founders, because that's also a really huge part of the startup, that are effectively able to integrate AI and security into their products or services somehow versus maybe some of the unfortunately unsuccessful companies?
Let me cut that question a little bit finer, because applying AI and making it work inside of your environment or inside of your product, that's one thing. And if you have a product that's an AI-based cybersecurity product and it works flawlessly, that's awesome. But I think it also comes down to, are customers willing to pay for that? So really, I think it starts, and this is not specific to AI. I think this is specific to any emerging technology or any emerging category, certainly in security. Are you solving the right problem? Like, are you focused on the right use case? There's like innumerable different problems that you can solve using AI and a bunch of different ways that you can solve those problems using AI. But are you picking the one that customers are willing to pay to have solved for them today? Versus, are you picking something that is just really cool and you think somebody should spend money on, but you're not really confident whether or not you're solving an important enough problem or you're doing it in a way that is going to move a customer? So I think it starts off with, you know, number one, are you focused on the right use case? Are you solving the right problem? There's a lot of work, I think, very early into a company's journey that has to be done to understand this, right? This gets to product market fit. And I think when you look at the last 5 years, so many companies that raised a lot of money and seemed to be able to do no wrong, when the money ran out, they found out that product market fit wasn't there. It doesn't really matter what came before that, right? Like, you hit the ceiling. So I think you care for, are we solving the right problem? Are we focused on the right use case? Are we focused on something customers are willing to pay for right now? Then outside of that piece, I think it really comes down to execution, right? So as a founder, especially as a first-time founder, number one, stay humble and stay nimble, right? It's easy to have quick and really big wins in cybersecurity. And then as soon as that happens, you can also have like a great downfall as well. So I think stay humble and stay nimble is also very important. And along with that comes the discipline around financing and spending. You know, I'm not here to give people fundraising advice, but I think if you look at the funding rounds and valuations and exits over the last 5 years, you can kind of piece together why you have to be a little careful around who you raise from, how much you raise, when you raise, the valuation, and how you're spending your money, which brings me to my next point. Especially in the AI space where we're still kind of learning what the market's going to respond to and what's possible with the technology, make sure that you're not buying your way out of every problem unless you have to. Because I think for especially a pre-revenue company or a company that's just starting to get revenue, you know, these seed rounds are getting pretty big nowadays. If you have $20 million in the bank, it's awfully easy to try to buy your way out of problems. And that can be buying products, that can be spending money on events, that could be spending money on a bunch of talent that you're not ready for or a bunch of talent that you don't necessarily need, which also introduces kind of a moral quandary too when you get to all the layoffs and things that have happened in our industry. So bringing it back to your question, I think number one, solve the right problem, focus on the right use case, make sure that you're really focused on something that's a real pain point for customers right now. Number two, stay disciplined, humble, and nimble, and don't buy your way out of every problem.
Well, Kyle, I just want to ask you generally, is there anything really important that you think our audience should know about this? Because we're really talking about something new, something that's going to evolve constantly over time. Anything I missed that I should have asked you about?
Right. It's a conversation that will continue to evolve. And I think, you know, we could talk for 3 hours and probably still have more to talk about. But when I think about the trends that are emerging right now, specifically around cybersecurity and AI, the hype is going to be unreal. It already is, right? And it always is when something new happens in the cybersecurity industry. But I think keeping your eye on, are we solving the right problem? While the hype is very noisy, that's always important, right? So careful about the hype. And that's both in terms of careful what you read and what you believe and what you subscribe to, but also careful for your company, you know, what sensational claims you might be making and things like that, feeding into that hype. Watch out for that. And that's a constant in cybersecurity. Number two, there's copilots everywhere now, right? Every product has a copilot, has a smart chatbot assistant. It's almost becoming table stakes now, but I'm not sure how much those co-pilots, most of them, how much value they're really bringing to the customer. So this kind of, again, gets back to solving the right problem. There's AI everywhere, but I would look for where are the kind of different novel applications for AI where AI can augment or replace, you know, human tasks. I think those are going to be those special little spots in the industry where something really interesting can happen rather than companies just raising their hand to say, me too. And then, you know, the last piece, and this kind of gets to your actual question here, is with these new solutions, there's also new challenges and problems that emerge as well. And so right now, for example, a lot of banks and non-software companies are using LLMs, building LLMs, buying LLMs. And so I think that we have to watch out for where there's opportunities to play in that part of the market as well. People are kind of referring to this part of the AI market as like guardrails, right? So you're building an LLM. How do we make sure that we're building an unbiased LLM that's not going to reveal sensitive customer information, reveal sensitive posture information for our organization and things like that? So all of a sudden, you have these non-software companies that are kind of developing software a little bit, which I guess happens, but this is happening kind of like an ultra accelerated rate now with AI. So I think keep an eye on the companies that are trying to basically fill that gap, the LLM guardrail contingent of startups out there as well. So like I said, we could talk forever about this, but I think these are the trends out there. We have to watch out for the hype, try to figure out where these novel use cases are, and pay attention to those rather than just kind of raising your hand to say me too, because it's hard to resist that when everybody is playing in the AI space.
Well, something fun I wanted to ask you before we go, because you're mentioning how AI becomes really interesting if and when it can actually replace people, right? And I know you're a musician. So, I mean, I know there is already AI music out there, but do you think we'll just all of a sudden have this competition on the billboards of AI generated music versus people generated music? And, you know, the questions about AI being creative and stuff like that, because you are creative, you are a musician. So I'd be curious your take there.
Yeah, I'm of two minds on that, because on one hand, there's something special about human beings creating something out of nothing. And a lot of the music I listen to is very cookie cutter, right? It's almost like a computer made it. You know, if I'm in the gym, I might put on whatever's on the radio. And a lot of that stuff is very formulaic. And that's fine, right? There's a place for it. There's a place for Katy Perry and Taylor Swift. I'm not saying they write their songs with AI, but those are the types of songs where there's really kind of a formula there. And that's everything from tempo to what modes are you using, what key are you in, and all that kind of stuff. So you can definitely program that. And I would imagine that you could probably instruct an AI to, hey, make me something that sounds like Taylor Swift, but also sounds like Gene Simmons is playing bass on it or something like that. I think that's cool, right? But at the same time, there's other kinds of music out there. And before we jumped on here, you and I were talking a little bit about jazz music. And of course, there's a lot of jazz music, right? Like elevator music and stuff that you could have an AI put together. But if you listen to, for example, there's a band out there I really love called Snarky Puppy. It's this one guy who has a network of, man, like dozens of musicians. And every once in a while, he'll bring them together to perform some of his compositions. And if you listen to any of their stuff, there's no way AI could put something like that together. I mean, something special happens when you put talented musicians in a room together and they're able to react in real time off of one another. And there's no way that an AI can know the influences of every musician in that room and, you know, what they're thinking in the moment. So I'm not anti-AI when it comes to art. I think AI is art a little bit in a certain respect, but I don't think we're fully going to ever replace human beings in that process. And I think that's kind of the antithesis of all this, right? Isn't the whole point that we can spend more time on art and less time on menial tasks? So anyways, it's an interesting conversation. We'll see how it evolves.
Well, I like that thought. And you also gave, I think, a lot of listeners, including myself, a new band to look up. So that'll be a lot of fun. But of course, a lot of thought leadership on AI, which we appreciate. And again, Kyle, thank you so much for joining.
I really appreciate you having me on, Paul. Thank you so much.
For Cybercrime Radio, I'm Paul John Spaulding. Joining me was Kyle McIntyre, owner and executive recruiter at McIntyre Associates. For more of our media, visit cybersecurityventures.com.